Movie Talk, episode 116, as I'll be talking Nightmare on Elm Street, part 4, The Dream Master.
Rick, you little meatball. I love soul food.
Guys, continuing on with talking about Nightmare on Elm Street, finally up to part 4. I hope you've been enjoying me recapping these movies. I'm kind of actually enjoying it myself because of the fact that this is one of the few series where I don't really watch a lot. But since I've gone back and been watching from the beginning and now up to part 4, I've kind of found my fandom for the series once again, because like I said, I think on episode 113 when I first started this, that this is the franchise that I really don't watch a lot. Friday the 13th, I can talk about front, backwards, or whatnot. The Halloweens, I can talk about front, backwards, backwards, front, you know, whatnot. But this franchise, even though it's considered one of the big three, for some reason, I never really, like, actually sit and actually watch them all the time and everything like that. So I've been enjoying going back and rewatching these movies and, you know, kind of relearning certain things about the canon and everything like that. And the fact that there are so many references to Friday the 13th, in both of Friday the 13th, there's a lot of references to Nightmare on Elm Street and everything. And this is before you know, we get them coming together with Freddy versus Jason, or even you know, the end scene in the final Friday, Jason goes to hell, where Freddy Gloves comes up and bring down Jason's mask to hell or whatnot. Even before we got to that and everything, where they kind of been like hinting back and forth that these two franchises kind of exist in the same universe in a way. But like I said, I've just been enjoying it and everything. But before I actually get into the movie, of course, just want to go over the cast for this one. So we have Robert Englund, who in the first movie of the franchise, he gets top billing. Robert Englund as Freddy gets top billing. We have Tuesday Knight taking over the role of Kristen here for Patricia Arquette. We have Andres Jones as Rick. We have Danny Hazel as Dan, which is funny. Returning Rodney Eastman as Joey, not Jesse, as I said in part 3, but Joey. Ken Sagos as Roland Kincaid. Toy Newkirk as Sheila. Brooke Theus as Debbie, and Lisa Wilcox as Alice. That's pretty much your main characters here, and everything. And it was directed by Rennie Harlan, who is best known for, you know, action movies, especially you know, early to mid 90s action films such as you know, Die Hard 2, Die Harder. Also, movie that doesn't get mentioned enough, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, which I know a lot of people don't really like it, but I actually watched it a few times and I actually like it for how cheesy and over the top it is. But feel that True Romance does, as far as the lighting and tinting and whatnot. He also did Cliffhanger, Cutthroat Island, good lord. The Lone Kiss Goodnight, which is a really good movie, and both of those movies star Gina Davis, but Cutthroat Island, I mean, it was just good and terrible, and I feel like it kind of ruined what could have been a huge success with The Lone Kiss Goodnight. But if I ever do Lone Kiss Goodnight, I'll probably go more in depth into that at some point. He also did Deep Blue Sea, which is a fun, you know, horror movie, you could call it that. And then in the 2000s, he did this movie with about racing with freaking Sylvester Stallone called Driven. Mindhunters, which is kind of an underrated psychological thriller. He did The Exorcist: The Beginning, which I've never really watched, but I've never really had a interest in watching it. And then, let's see, The Coven, 12 Rounds. Let's see, what else? He did some TV stuff in recent years, like Covert Affairs, Bird Notice, Graceland. And looking at his credits coming up, you know, lately, doesn't look at, like, anything that I'll be interested in. Anything. I mean, he kind of needs to get back into, if not going back to the horror genre, at least getting back to doing good action movies again, because that's one thing that's kind of lacking. Like, we don't have a lot of good action films, and he did have, you know, a couple of movies, you know, in the mid-90s that were good action and everything like that. So hopefully, you know, maybe he kind of, you know, because things do happen in cycles, he maybe circle back to doing some good action films and whatnot. So getting into the movie, kicks off with New Kristen Tuesday night, and everything, and she's having a dream, and she feels like Freddy is coming back. Now, we don't know exactly why she feels that way or anything, but she just has this, you know, scary suspicion that Freddy Krueger is coming back and he's gonna kill them and everything like this. And through her paranoia, she brings Joey and Kincaid into her dream. And, you know, just seeing, even though this should be like a happy reunion between these three characters, because they are the three returning, you know, survivors from the previous film, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors or whatnot. They are the only kids who survived that one. And it should have been a happy reunion, but it feels like it doesn't have the same feel to it because of the fact that we have Tuesday night instead of Patricia Arquette. And there's rumors, theories, and everything why she did not return for this one. But it would have been, in a way, it would have been nice if she would have came back just to have that little happy reunion between these three characters and everything. And the fact that they still remain friends after, you know, the whole Western Hills, you know, hospital and everything like that. So Kincaid and Joy just basically have to convince her, like, hey, you know, he's dead. He's not coming back. But she just still, you know, dead set on, oh, he's coming. He's coming, gonna return. And they're like, no, look, the boiler is cold. He's gone. We killed him. We got rid of him. And if he does come back, we'll just do it again. You know, Joey and Kincaid kind of become very cocky and whatnot. But in a way, they kind of right. Like, okay, if he's coming back, you know, they could just band together again. You know, kick his behind and get him, you know, get him out of there or whatnot. But she just has this craziness or whatnot in regards to him returning and everything like that. And I've always found it interesting that they brought these three characters back just to kill them off, and which kind of sucked, because let's say we see what they go through in part three. I mean, and if you wanted to kill off Joey and Kincaid, you could have easily done that and let Kristen be the sole survivor of the kids and go from there. But you let Joey live. You let Kincaid live. I mean, it's one of the few times that black guy actually lives in, you know, in horror movies or whatnot, in part three. So I guess they felt that, well, since we let him live in part three, he's going to be the first victim in part four, which he is. He falls asleep and he ends up in the junkyard, where we know Freddy's body, well, his remains have been, and everything like that. And he basically, you know, wakes up in the back of one of the cars and everything, and he, you know, goes around, and then the freaking dog basically pisses fire, and it brings Freddy back, and they have like a little back and forth, and Freddy ends up killing Kincaid in his sleep, which is very sad. And Freddy, he is like one down, two to go. So he is basically back with a vengeance of where he got to get rid of the last of the Elm Street children. And so he proceeds to go to Joey next, who his weakness has always been women. And Freddy uses that to his advantage, and that's how he kills him in his waterbed. And How he actually got inside the waterbed, who the hell actually knows? But that's what happened. He basically sucks him to the waterbed and he drowns in the waterbed. And his mom finds him. And it's really a sad type of scene or whatnot, because his mom, she's fussing at him about him keeping his room clean and everything like that. And then she pulls back the cover just to see her son like that. And the actress who plays Joey's mom, she sells that very well. And everything. Like I said, very sad in a way to watch that, because of the expression that's on her face, like just all hope had just left her, especially dealing with probably everything that Joey went through, you know, just to kind of get back to a normal life, just for that to happen to him and everything. So gets rid of him, and then Freddy goes after Kristen. And I find it very interesting that in a weird way Freddy almost kind of pulls a part two move here, where he basically wants, because Kristen would have been the last of the Elm Street kids who actually believed in him, so to kind of keep himself, you know, relevant, alive or anything like that, he goats Kristen into bringing in another friend or whatnot, you know, bringing in someone else, and she's trying to fight it, and she unwillingly brings in Alice and everything, who he meets, who's a very shy girl and everything, brings Alice in. And Alice, you know, meets Freddy and everything like that. And Kristen tries to fight Freddy and gets tossed into the freaking boiler. And she dies, but her power leaves out of her and it goes into Alice. Which I was like, okay, I see where we're going with that. Which was kind of interesting, the fact that Alice now becomes the new girl and everything. And now Freddy kind of has a way to still be alive, because if he would have just killed off Kristen, no one else would have believed in Freddy, because none of them were any more of the original Elm Street children who knew the story of Freddy and what their parents had done. So we get this new group of teenagers, and similar to part three, this group, I mean, in the real world, I don't think any of these people would have been friends. I mean, Rick and Alice are brother and sister, so of course they would have been, you know, whatnot. But Kristen and Rick, who are boyfriend and girlfriend, even they, I think, okay, that kind of makes sense. But Debbie and Sheila or whatnot, you have this kind of, I want to say like a glam, you know, rocker type girl. And then Sheila, who's the nerdy girl and everything like this. How exactly are they all friends? It just didn't kind of fit. But I did like the fact that you do have like some diversity to the groups and everything. So just, even though on paper it doesn't make sense, but it finds a way to work where they all are like friendly or whatnot. And this is basically who we follow here from the rest of the movie type of thing. But one thing that kind of struck me is like, okay, how much time exactly has passed between part three and four? Because I always took it under the impression that these kids, well, in part three, they were like in high school, at least. I mean, are they supposed to have been in middle school and then now we're in high school? But even still, how many years have gone by, you know, or whatnot with them? Like, what years exactly are they supposed to be? Or were they like freshmen in high school when they ended up in the hospital? And then when they get out, they, you know, continued on. Everything, how long had they been in the hospital? Were they in there for a couple of months? Were they in for a couple of years? Who, like, that's never fully explained. So for Kristen, Joey, and Kincaid to be still in high school, it was kind of weird, especially when I always took it that they were kind of supposed to be like older than the other kids or whatnot. So I don't know, it's kind of weird, and that's never fully explained to me and everything like that. But so one thing that we find out here, I mean, it kind of goes back to the subtitle of the movie, of the Dream Master. Alice, before Kristen is killed off, Alice tells Kristen about the Dream Master power that she has, where, because it's kind of like played out through the movie, where Alice has this way of, when someone says something to her, she can imagine it and play it out in her mind differently than how it's actually going in person. And she is this whole Dream Master thing, and she tries to tell Kristen about that, and unfortunately, of course, it doesn't work out for Kristen. Kristen's only good at bringing people into her dreams, but Alice is the Dream Master and everything. And I really like what they did with the Alice character in this movie. It's a very empowering type of a character, even though she starts out one way as this shy, kind of nerdy, you know, plain Jane girl or whatnot. But through the course of the movie, when her friends and family members are starting to get killed off, every time one of them dies, she absorbs like their strength, and it makes her stronger. And one of my favorite scenes in the movie is that when, after all of them have been killed off, Alice, because she has this mirror on her dresser, and it's filled with nothing but pictures, but as she becomes to get stronger, the pictures come down and you start to see Alice. And like I said, once she's absorbed all of her friend's, you know, power or whatnot, the mirror is clean and she is looking at herself. So she looks back at herself now and everything like that. And like I said, I just felt like there's a good underlying message about self-esteem in this movie, and it plays out through the Alice character and everything like that. So that's one reason why I really enjoy the character of Alice. And I think Lisa Wilcox does a really good job here in part four as Alice. And even though it's kind of subtle or whatnot, but I feel like it there is a deeper message with a lot of these movies. I mean, the third movie deals with, you know, youth and teen suicide and, you know, things that don't really get talked about, but at the same time, it's a hot button topic. And I feel like teen, you know, self-esteem and everything like that, trying to find your way, find who you are as a person, I think that's what plays out, and Alice is the catalyst that kind of plays that out in this movie. So I mean, Alice, like I'm saying, you know, as everyone's kind of getting killed off, I mean, this movie does have some kind of interesting kill scenes. Sheila's kill scene, because Sheila is asthmatic or whatnot, Freddy kills her in the classroom by using her asthma. He kisses her and actually sucks all the life out of her, and the way that goes, where her body just goes completely, gets completely drained and everything, it just falls back into the chair as a dummy or whatnot. I mean, that's kind of that's a cool scene. But the one for me that's kind of creepy in a way is because Debbie has this thing about insects, and she gets turned into a freaking cockroach, and that's one of the creepiest things ever. With how, I mean, the special effects is good, but I mean, I have a thing against roaches too, and just for her to turn into a cockroach or whatnot, it's just like, ah, that's how I felt about that and whatnot. But it was still a cool effect and everything. Now the one that I didn't really like so much was when Freddy goes against Rick, and Rick is supposed to be like this, you know, he's supposed to be like a kung fu he's learning karate and everything like this, and think, oh, okay, they can have a, you know, pretty good fight. But no, it's Rick versus a doggone ghost. You don't see Freddy. It's in the, and what's weird about it is the fact that it takes place in the dream world, but Freddy never shows himself to Rick. You see his glove, and like I said, and the fact that he's supposed to be like, oh, about karate or whatnot, but he's throwing haymakers left and right like it's just a freaking brawl or something. And it's like, what the hell is this? And I mean, that scene could have been a lot better. But so like I say, after they all die and everything, and Freddy basically, he's playing with Alice here, and I don't think, not even with Nancy, he did this, but for some reason with Alice, he really, like, in a way, has a sick sense of humor towards her, and how he wants to continue to make his, you know, his presence be known to the outside kids even more. And he's using Alice and everything. But in one scene particular that I really like, and I feel like Robert Englund does a good job in this scene, is the scene in the diner, in the dream in the diner, where Alice sees old lady Alice still working at the Crave Inn, you know, diner or whatnot, and she's sitting there, and all of a sudden, you know, old Alice gives her a pizza, and then comes sitting next to her is Freddy, and just how he kind of just comes up and just, he sits there, and how he looks down at the pizza, and we see Rick and Debbie, well, not Debbie, Sheila and Kristen, and everything in the piece, like they're yelling because their souls are trapped and everything. And Freddy just comes in, pokes one of them out, and he eats it, and he's just looking at her like, yeah, like, what are you gonna do? You know, and everything, like, I got you now, and everything. And Robert Englund is like, he's just having a blast with this role. And in this scene, like I said, it stands out real good. It's one of my favorite scenes of the franchise period. But so as things kind of go on and Alice finally gets, you know, everyone's power in her, she decides to take on Freddy, and she ends up going into the dream world to face off against him after she gets in a terrible car accident with Dan, who starts out as like the outside jock who could have easily been like a, you know, he could have been like a douchebag or whatnot, but they make Dan into like a likable character, and him and Alice actually hook up and everything. Because early in the movie, when she first see Dan or whatnot, she daydreams about, you know, him walking over to her, and he's like, hey, Alice, and everything. And she's like, you're one major league hunk and everything. But then she flashes back and just sees him like walking away with his friends and whatnot. And when they actually do kind of start talking, you know, you can see that the power of Debbie that's in her gives her the confidence to want to talk to Dan, because it's implied that Debbie has a thing for Dan as well. So not only did Alice like him, but Debbie liked him. And I think by having having Debbie's, you know, power in her, that made her even more stronger, her feelings even more stronger for Dan. And that's how they ended up getting together. But her and Dan is trying to save Debbie at this point. That's when Debbie gets turned to the cockroach. But they realize that they have fallen asleep, because they end up in a freaking time loop of trying to get to Debbie's house. And they don't Dan is the one who actually realizes it at first, and then we're like, oh no, we're asleep and everything. But they get into a bad accident. Dan ends up going to the hospital, and he's badly hurt, and Freddy is about to get him, but because the doctors and everything are working on him, they pull him out of the dream. So that's how Dan survives this movie. And I just leave it at that, because I'll talk about more about Dan in part 5, which I feel like this accident in part 4 kind of foreshadows what happens to Dan in part 5. But anyway, so Alice is left to basically fight against Freddy, and they have this amazing fight scene in this church. So once again, religion, I mean, not as much as in part 3, but religion kind of plays a part once again in this franchise, where they face off in a church. And Freddy, you know, he gets his hat sent to him, basically. He gets beat up by Alice in the beginning, and then he comes back, he throws Alice over the pew and everything like this. But then she gets back up, and then she beats the holy hell out of him. I just like that fight scene between the two of them, because it's like Alice has the strength now to actually take him on. Because like I say, it kind of goes back to the whole self-esteem thing. She has the power to take him on, and Freddy, it looks like Freddy is like toying with her to some degree, but at the same time, he is getting his behind whooped. So you can't never really know with him, like, okay, how badly is she really hurting him? But he does say that you might have their power, but I have their souls, you know, type of thing. Just kind of saying a whole bunch of trash talking to her. But the only thing that kind of lets this scene down to me is how they get rid of Freddy here, which is where his reflection is what takes him out. Because when his reflection is shown to him in the mirror, the souls that are trapped basically tear him apart from the inside. I mean, it's a cool effect and everything. And for anyone who don't know, one of the best scream queens of all time, in my opinion, Linnea Quigley is one of the souls that's trapped inside Freddy. And you can actually tell which one she is, because they make sure they put the camera on her as she's pressing through you know, his torso and everything. And I remember seeing that scene being made in the Never Sleep Again documentary, and the fact that giant torso thing collapses over and they all go tumbling down, and it's like, oh my god, these people damn near die trying to do this crazy scene or whatnot. So anytime I see that scene now, I always think about the documentary and back to when they had that accident on set. So they all kind of, the souls basically tear Freddy apart and everything like that. And the souls are freed and they all go off. I kind of would have liked, though, when the souls are going, that we would have probably seen, like, maybe Rick or even Kristen kind of, you know, as their souls is leaving, you know, they would have showed them as they were going, and like maybe Alice could have seen them as they, you know, the souls were freed for them to go to heaven or something like that. But we don't. I mean, she just see the souls kind of like, you know, just flying off and everything. And then she walks up out of there, and then it comes back to where her and Dan are, you know, are the only survivors, and that's how the movie ends, basically. Like I said, I didn't really want to go through too much of this movie because, once again, the movie is, I mean, it is 30 years old at this point. So I didn't have to go like scene by scene. Just wanted to kind of pick out some of the important stuff for me, at least, to talk about from the movie. And Robert Englund, man, I just got to say that. I know I said in the previous episode that part three is where it starts to shift in regards to him and everything. And I mean, he is somewhat funny in this one, but he's still kind of serious as well. There's still some of that serious Freddy still clinging on here, but there are a few things where he's kind of, you know, goofy or whatnot, but not as goofy as where we will get to eventually with him. I think Robert Englund does a good job here, and like I say, he gets top billing. He is in more of this one than he was in part three, and everything, and just feels like he has mastered this character, I will say, with this movie. He's really Freddy at this point. If I had to give this movie a rating, because, like I said, I like the underlying message of the whole thing in regards to Alice and the self-esteem and things like that, I give it a solid 3. And everything is a solid 3 for me. If I had to pick a favorite character, I probably would go with Alice. Like I said, I don't include Robert Englund in it, so because that's too easy to do. But Alice, because we kind of get this growth with her throughout the course of the movie, how she starts out one way, and by the end she's this, you know, badass woman that takes no prisoners and takes on the dream demon head on and everything. Like I said, I just really like that, and everything. So that's pretty much it for this episode 116. I did this episode actually early because I won't be in town to record anything, because I actually going out of town. I'm leaving from Florida and I'm going to New York for a vacation and everything. So I felt like I need to do this episode early, so it'd be at least an episode up. And I will be back for episode 117 as I talk about The Dream Child, which I haven't seen that movie in a long time, so I'm kind of interested to see how my feelings are about that movie. Of course, you can check me out on Twitter at JMovieTalk, as well as all of the episodes, JMovieTalk, available on the TV Zone Podcast Network, on Podbean.com, and wherever else you listen to your podcast. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else to listen to them and everything. Of course, you can check out the Instagram page, JMT Podcast, and everything like that. And like I say, all of TV Zone Podcast episodes on TV Zone Podcast Network.podbean.com. And I will catch you guys for episode 117. Peace.